If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life. And I had to start again with just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today,
where the flag still stands for freedom and they can't take that away.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today, 'cause there ain't no doubt I love this land.
God bless the USA.
Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Thumper. Welcome to Connecting the Dots. I tell you what, there's so much that we need to do for this country. Our country is right now in an incredible crisis. I don't think we've seen this kind of a crisis in our country since really before the Civil War. And all I can say is that it's so important that we have the patriots we have and that we do everything that we can do to save this country, because frankly, right now, the enemies are at the gates. And Thumper, I had that spot with Trump before the UN. I'd like to start the program today because I think people need to understand just exactly why President Donald Trump had so many people attacking him and so many people trying to destroy his presidency. This isn't just a problem with Democrats in Congress. This isn't a problem with just the deep state in our country. This is a worldwide phenomenon. And I think the sooner that people realize that we are literally in a life and death struggle against the New World Order, to save this country, to hold this country out as the very last best hope for the world. And without the United States, we will, as Ronald Reagan said so succinctly, we will slip into 1,000 years of darkness. And I truly believe that, because the forces we're lined up against are worse even than communism. They're technocracy, and it's a global feudalist system that's meant to be run by a very, very few of the very wealthiest people in the world, and everyone else is pretty much cannon fodder. They're there just to serve these people, and the sooner that the people that think they're moving this wonderful socialism into play and all these wonderful things that they're doing, the sooner they realize that they are the useful idiots that are being conditioned and being brought into the thing to get rid of the patriots. And as soon as the patriots are gone, then they're going to get rid of them. It's just that simple. And people need to understand we have a common enemy. We don't have an enemy on the right or the left, or we don't have an enemy that, is a particular color, particular sex, or any of this other crap. They've been using all of our differences to try to get us to hate one another, to fight one another. And we really need to understand that we need to love one another. We need to work with the rest of humanity to make a better world. And that world will only be better if we expose the New World Order. Unless we expose the New World Order and the power elite that plan to control everything, we will never get anywhere, and all of humanity will suffer, because keep in mind, they plan on reducing the world's population to fewer than a billion people, and they're dead serious about that, and they really truly mean that. So people, wake up. If we don't stand together now, we will never stand, and we will, in fact, lose humanity. So with that, Thumper, do we have that that speech by President Trump ready to go?
It'll be up on screen in just a moment.
Okay, wonderful. Well, it shows you just how dedicated Donald Trump was to the United States of America and to our national sovereignty. So let's go ahead and play this. This will be a great lead in, and Dr. Shiva will be joining us sometime toward the end of this hour.
Okay, here we go.
The Assembly will hear an address by His Excellency Donald Trump, President of the United States of America. I request protocol to escort His Excellency. On behalf of the General Assembly, I have the honor to welcome to the United Nations His Excellency Donald Trump, President of the United States of America, and to invite him to address the Assembly. You have the floor, sir.
Madam President, Mr. Secretary General, world leaders, ambassadors, and distinguished delegates. 1 year ago, I stood before you for the first time in this grand hall. I addressed the threats facing our world, and I presented a vision to achieve a brighter future for all of humanity. Today, I stand before the United Nations General Assembly to share the extraordinary progress we've made. In less than 2 years, my administration has accomplished more than almost any administration in the history of our country. America's so true. Didn't expect that reaction, but that's okay. America's economy is booming like never before. Since my election, we've added $10 trillion in wealth. The stock market is at an all-time high in history, and jobless claims are at a 50-year low. African-American, Hispanic-American, and Asian-American unemployment have all achieved their lowest levels ever recorded. We've added more than 4 million new jobs, including 500,000 manufacturing jobs. We have passed the biggest tax cuts and reforms in American history. We've started the construction of a major border wall, and we have greatly strengthened border security. We have secured record funding for our military, $700 this year, and $716 billion next year. Our military will soon be more powerful than it has ever been before. In other words, the United States is stronger, safer, and a richer country than it was when I assumed office less than 2 years ago. We are standing up for America and for the American people, and we are also standing up for the world. This is great news for our citizens and for peace-loving people everywhere. We believe that when nations respect the rights of their neighbors and defend the interests of their people, they can better work together to secure the blessings of safety, prosperity, and peace. Each of us here today is the emissary of a distinct culture, a rich history, and a people bound together by ties of memory, tradition, and the values that make our homelands like nowhere else on earth. That is why America will always choose independence and cooperation over global governance, control, and domination. I honor the right of every nation in this room to pursue its own customs, beliefs, and traditions. The United States will not tell you how to live or work or worship. We only ask that you honor our sovereignty in return. From Warsaw to Brussels to Tokyo to Singapore, it has been my highest honor to represent the United States abroad. I have forged close relationships and friendships and strong partnerships with the leaders of many nations in this room, and our approach has always yielded incredible change. With support from many countries here today, we have engaged with North Korea to replace the specter of conflict with a bold and new push for peace. In June, I traveled to Singapore to meet face-to-face with North Korea's leader, Chairman Kim Jong-un. We had highly productive conversations and meetings, and we agreed that it was in both countries' interest to pursue the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. Since that meeting, we have already seen a number of encouraging measures that few could have imagined only a short time ago. The missiles and rockets are no longer flying in every direction. Nuclear testing has stopped. Some military facilities are already being dismantled. Our hostages have been released, and as promised, the remains of our fallen heroes are being returned home to lay at rest in American soil. I would like to thank Chairman Kim for his courage and for the steps he has taken, though much work remains to be done. The sanctions will stay in place until denuclearization occurs. I also want to thank the many member states who helped us reach this moment, a moment that is actually far greater than people would understand, far greater, but for also their support and the critical support that we will all need going forward. Special thanks to President Moon of South Korea, Prime Minister Abe of Japan, and President Xi of China. In the Middle East, our new approach is also yielding great strides and very historic change. Following my trip to Saudi Arabia last year, the Gulf countries opened a new center to target terrorist financing. They are enforcing new sanctions, working with us to identify and track terrorist networks, and taking more responsibility for fighting terrorism and extremism in their own region. The UAE, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar have pledged billions of dollars to aid the people of Syria and Yemen, and they are pursuing multiple avenues to ending Yemen's horrible, horrific civil war. Ultimately, it is up to the nations of the region to decide what kind of future they want for themselves and their children. For that reason, the United States is working with the Gulf Cooperation Council, Jordan, and Egypt to establish a regional strategic alliance so that Middle Eastern nations can advance prosperity, stability, and security across their home region. Thanks to the United States military and our partnership with many of your nations, I am pleased to report that the bloodthirsty killers known as ISIS have been driven out from the territory they once held in Iraq and Syria. We will continue to work with friends and allies to deny radical Islamic terrorists any funding, territory, or support, or any means of infiltrating our borders. The ongoing tragedy in Syria is heartbreaking. Our shared goals must be the de-escalation of military conflict, along with a political solution that honors the will of the Syrian people. In this vein, we urge the United Nations-led peace process be reinvigorated, but rest assured the United States will respond if chemical weapons are deployed by the Assad regime. I commend the people of Jordan and other neighboring countries for hosting refugees from this very brutal civil war. As we see in Jordan, the most compassionate policy is to place refugees as close to their homes as possible, to ease their eventual return to be part of the rebuilding process. This approach also stretches finite resources to help far more people, increasing the impact of every dollar spent. Every solution to the humanitarian crisis in Syria must also include a strategy to address the brutal regime that has fueled and financed it, the corrupt dictatorship in Iran. Iran's leaders sow chaos, death, and destruction. They do not respect their neighbors or borders or the sovereign rights of nations. Instead, Iran's leaders plunder the nation's resources to enrich themselves and to spread mayhem across the Middle East and far beyond. The Iranian people are rightly outraged that their leaders have embezzled billions of dollars from Iran's treasury, seized valuable portions of the economy, and looted the people's religious endowments, all to line their own pockets and send their proxies to wage war. Not good. Iran's neighbors have paid a heavy toll for the region's agenda of aggression and expansion. That is why so many countries in the Middle East strongly supported my decision to withdraw the United States from the horrible 2015 Iran nuclear deal and reimpose nuclear sanctions. The Iran deal was a windfall for Iran's leaders. In the years since the deal was reached, Iran's military budget grew nearly 40%. The dictatorship used the funds to build nuclear-capable missiles, increase internal repression, finance terrorism, and fund havoc and slaughter in Syria and Yemen. The United States has launched a campaign of economic pressure to deny the regime the funds it needs to advance its bloody agenda. Last month, we began reimposing hard-hitting nuclear sanctions that have been lifted under the Iran deal. Additional sanctions will resume November 5th, and war will follow. And we are working with countries that import Iranian crude oil to cut their purchases substantially. We cannot allow the world's leading sponsor of terrorism to possess the planet's most dangerous weapons. We cannot allow a regime that chants death to America and that threatens Israel with annihilation to possess the means to deliver a nuclear warhead to any city on Earth. Just can't do it. We ask all nations to isolate Iran's regime as long as its aggression continues. And we ask all nations to support Iran's people as they struggle to reclaim their religious and righteous destiny. This year, we also took another significant step forward in the Middle East in recognition of every sovereign state to determine its own capital. I moved the U.S. Embassy in Israel to Jerusalem. The United States is committed to a future of peace and stability in the region, including peace between the Israelis and the Palestinians. That aim is advanced, not harmed, by acknowledging the obvious facts. America's policy of principled realism means we will not be held hostage to old dogmas, discredited ideologies, and so-called experts who have been proven wrong over the years, time and time again. This is true not only in matters of peace, but in matters of prosperity. We believe that trade must be fair and reciprocal. The United States will not be taken advantage of any longer. For decades, the United States opened its economy, the largest by far on Earth, with few conditions. We allowed foreign goods from all over the world to flow freely across our borders. Yet, other countries did not grant us fair and reciprocal access to their markets in return. Even worse, some countries abused their openness to dump their products, subsidize their goods, target our industries, and manipulate their currencies to gain unfair advantage over our country. As a result, our trade deficit ballooned to nearly $800 billion a year. For this reason, we are systematically renegotiating broken and bad trade deals. Last month, we announced a groundbreaking U.S.-Mexico trade agreement. And just yesterday, I stood with President Moon to announce the successful completion of the brand new U.S.-Korea trade deal. And this is just the beginning. Many nations in this hall will agree that the world trading system is in dire need of change. For example, countries were admitted to the World Trade Organization that violate every single principle on which the organization is based. While the United States and many other nations play by the rules, these countries use government-run industrial planning and state-owned enterprises to rig the system in their favor. They engage in relentless product dumping, forced technology transfer, and the theft of intellectual property. The United States lost over 3 million manufacturing jobs, nearly a quarter of all steel jobs, and 60,000 factories after China joined the WTO. And we have racked up $13 trillion in trade deficits over the last two decades. But those days are over. We will no longer tolerate such abuse. We will not allow our workers to be victimized, our companies to be cheated, and our wealth to be plundered and transferred. America will never apologize for protecting its citizens. The United States has just announced tariffs on another $200 billion in Chinese-made goods, for a total so far of $250 billion. I have great respect and affection for my friend, President Xi, but I have made clear our trade imbalance is just not acceptable. China's market distortions and the way they deal cannot be tolerated. As my administration has demonstrated, America will always act in our national interests. I spoke before this body last year and warned that the UN Human Rights Council had become a grave embarrassment to this institution, shielding egregious human rights abusers while bashing America and its many friends. Our ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, laid out a clear agenda for reform, but despite reported and repeated warnings, no action at all was taken. So the United States took the only responsible course. We withdrew from the Human Rights Council, and we will not return until real reform is enacted. For similar reasons, the United States will provide no support and recognition to the International Criminal Court. As far as America is concerned, the ICC has no jurisdiction, no legitimacy, and no authority. The ICC claims near universal jurisdiction over the citizens of every country, violating all principles of justice, fairness, and due process. We will never surrender America's sovereignty to an unelected, unaccountable global bureaucracy. America is governed by Americans. We reject the ideology of globalism, and we embrace the doctrine of patriotism. Around the world, responsible nations must defend against threats to sovereignty, not just from global governments, but also from other new forms of coercion and domination. In America, we believe strongly in energy security for ourselves and for our allies. We have become the largest energy producer anywhere on the face of the earth. The United States stands ready to export our abundant, affordable supply of oil, clean coal, and natural gas. OPEC and OPEC nations are, as usual, ripping off the rest of the world, and I don't like it. Nobody should like it. We defend many of these nations for nothing, and then they take advantage of us by giving us high oil prices. Not good. We want them to stop raising prices. We want them to start lowering prices, and they must contribute substantially to military protection from now on. We are not going to put up with it, these horrible prices, much longer. Reliance on a single foreign supplier can leave a nation vulnerable to extortion and intimidation. That is why we congratulate European states such as Poland for leading the construction of a Baltic pipeline so that nations are not dependent on Russia to meet their energy needs. Germany will become totally dependent on Russian energy if it does not immediately change course. Here in the Western Hemisphere, we are committed to maintaining our independence from the encroachment of expansionist foreign powers. It has been the formal policy of our country since President Monroe that we reject the interference of foreign nations in this hemisphere and in our own affairs. The United States has recently strengthened our laws to better screen foreign investments in our country for national security threats. And we welcome cooperation with countries in this region and around the world that wish to do the same. You need to do it for your own protection. The United States is also working with partners in Latin America to confront threats to sovereignty from uncontrolled migration. Tolerance for human struggling and human smuggling and trafficking is not humane. It's a horrible thing that's going on at levels that nobody has ever seen before. It's very, very cruel. Illegal immigration funds, criminal networks, ruthless gangs, and the flow of deadly drugs. Illegal immigration exploits vulnerable populations, hurts hardworking citizens, and has produced a vicious cycle of crime, violence, and poverty. Only by upholding national borders, destroying criminal gangs, can we break this cycle and establish a real foundation for prosperity. We recognize the right of every nation in this room to set its own immigration policy in accordance with its national interests, just as we ask other countries to respect our own right to do the same, which we are doing. That is one reason the United States will not participate in the new Global Compact on Migration. Migration should not be governed by an international body unaccountable to our own citizens. Ultimately, the only long-term solution to the migration crisis is to help people build more hopeful futures in their home countries. Make their countries great again. Currently, we are witnessing a human tragedy, as an example, in Venezuela. More than 2 million people have fled the anguish inflicted by the socialist Maduro regime and its Cuban sponsors. Not long ago, Venezuela was one of the richest countries on earth. Today, socialism has bankrupted the oil-rich nation and driven its people into abject poverty. Virtually everywhere socialism or communism has been tried, it has produced suffering, corruption, and decay. Socialism's thirst for power leads to expansion, incursion, and oppression. All nations of the world should resist socialism and the misery that it brings to everyone. In that spirit, we ask the nations gathered here to join us in calling for the restoration of democracy in Venezuela. Today, we are announcing additional sanctions against the repressive regime, targeting Maduro's inner circle and close advisors. We are grateful for all of the work the United Nations does around the world to help people build better lives for themselves and their families. The United States is the world's largest giver in the world, by far, of foreign aid. But few give anything to us. That is why we are taking a hard look at U.S. foreign assistance. That will be headed up by Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. We will examine what is working, what is not working, and whether the countries who receive our dollars and our protection also have our interests at heart. Moving forward, we are only going to give foreign aid to those who respect us and, frankly, are our friends. And we expect other countries to pay their fair share for the cost of their defense. The United States is committed to making the United Nations more effective and accountable. I have said many times that the United Nations has unlimited potential. As part of our reform effort, I have told our negotiators that the United States will not pay more than 25% of the UN peacekeeping budget. This will encourage other countries to step up, get involved, and also share in this very large burden. And we are working to shift more of our funding from assessed contributions to voluntary, so that we can target American resources to the programs with the best record of success. Only when each of us does our part and contributes our share can we realize the UN's highest aspirations. We must pursue peace without fear, hope without despair, and security without apology. Looking around this hall where so much history has transpired, we think of the many before us who have come here to address the challenges of their nations and of their times. And our thoughts turn to the same question that ran through all their speeches and resolutions, through every word and every hope. It is the question of what kind of world will we leave for our children, and what kind of nations they will inherit. The dreams that fill this hall today are as diverse as the people who have stood at this podium, and as varied as the countries represented right here in this body are. It really is something. It really is great, great history. There is India, a free society over a billion people, successfully lifting countless millions out of poverty and into the middle class. There is Saudi Arabia, where King Salman and the Crown Prince are pursuing bold new reforms. There is Israel, proudly celebrating its 70th anniversary as a thriving democracy in the Holy Land. In Poland, the great people are standing up for their independence, their security, and their sovereignty. Many countries are pursuing their own unique visions, building their own hopeful futures, and chasing their own wonderful dreams of destiny, of legacy, and of a home. The whole world is richer. Humanity is better because of this beautiful constellation of nations, each very special, each very unique, and each shining brightly in its part of the world. In each one, we see awesome promise of a people bound together by a shared past and working toward a common future. As for Americans, we know what kind of future we want for ourselves. We know what kind of a nation America must always be. In America, we believe in the majesty of freedom and the dignity of the individual. We believe in self-government and the rule of law, and we prize the culture that sustains our liberty, a culture built on strong families, deep faith, and fierce independence. We celebrate our heroes. We treasure our traditions. And above all, we love our country. Inside everyone in this great chamber today, and everyone listening all around the globe, there is the heart of a patriot that feels the same powerful love for your nation, the same intense loyalty to your homeland. The passion that burns in the hearts of patriots and the souls of nations has inspired reform and revolution, sacrifice and selflessness, scientific breakthroughs, and magnificent works of art. Our task is not to erase it, but to embrace it, to build with it, to draw on its ancient wisdom, and to find within it the will to make our nations greater, our region safer, and the world better, to unleash this incredible potential in our people. We must defend the foundations that make it all possible. Sovereign and independent nations are the only vehicle where freedom has ever survived, democracy has ever endured, where peace has ever prospered. And so we must protect our sovereignty and our cherished independence above all. When we do, we will find new avenues for cooperation unfolding before us, we will find new passion for peacemaking rising within us. We will find new purpose, new resolve, and new spirit flourishing all around us and making this a more beautiful world in which to live. So together, let us choose a future of patriotism, prosperity, and pride. Let us choose peace and freedom over domination and defeat. And let us come here to this place to stand for our people and their nations, forever strong, forever sovereign, forever just, and forever thankful for the grace and the goodness and the glory of God. Thank you, God bless you, and God bless the nations of the world. Thank you very much. Thank you.
On behalf of the General Assembly, I wish to thank the President of the United States of America for the statement just made. May I request representatives to remain seated while we greet the President, after which the meeting will stand suspended for 5 minutes before resuming to hear the next speaker.
All right, there you go, Dan.
Okay, Thumper, thank you. I have to tell you that it's obvious why so many despots, so many people who want a one world totalitarian government, who want one world technocracy. We can label it anything we want. We can label it fascism, technocracy, communism, Marxism, totalitarianism, but it always boils down to the same thing. One world government, a oligarchy, a group, a very small group of men controlling everything. And the people who think that because they promote something like socialism or anything that takes the rights of the individual away and destroy the rights to private property, anyone who does that is playing right into the hands of the one world government people, and they need to wake up. They need to realize we are in this leaky little boat together. And if we don't stand up for national sovereignty and for the rights of our individual citizens to do all things that America's been famous for, own private property, have liberty, have the ability to make your own personal choices, to live where you want, to go to school where you want, to do the things that you need to do as a private citizen to assure that you have the rights and the responsibilities of an individual. And obviously with those rights, individual freedoms also require that we have personal responsibility. It means we need to be responsible for our own actions. And that doesn't play very well with socialism and all these people who want someone else to make all the decisions for them. Look at what happened in the Soviet Union. Look at what happened in communist China. There ain't no such thing as a free lunch. And anybody who thinks that if they promote this system, they're going to end up having somebody else giving them a free ride, you are wrong, folks. You are dead wrong. Because the reality is, you are going to get not only not a free ride, you're going to end up becoming a slave of the state, and they're going to tell you what you need to do to earn your keep. And then all the freedom that you've had in the past as an American citizen goes away. Well, that's my preaching for this morning, Thumper, on that regard. But I found it really interesting that President Trump was talking about the International Criminal Court and the fact that American citizens are not subject to ICC regulations. And I can't agree with that more, because obviously the International Criminal Court, we've got to understand that the UN was formed under a communist system. the architects of the UN General Assembly, their Declaration of Human Rights, all the things that are the essence of the UN were really put in place under the system of communism that Joseph Stalin had in place throughout the 30s, 40s, and 50s. And the formation of the UN in 1944, we need to understand that the architects that were part of the Dumbarton Oaks Conference that was in San Francisco in 1943 to 44 was actually run by communists that were handpicked by Joe Stalin. And so we need to understand that we have, even in our midst, we have a whole bunch of people who would try to change our country, change our culture. We're seeing that now with, well, frankly, with the current administration. We're seeing an attempt to go back to what Obama called a fundamental transformation of America. This doesn't have anything to do with the color of your skin or the your religious beliefs, your ethnicity, your sex, your proclivities. It has nothing to do with that. It has everything to do with changing our entire culture and promoting a communist system. And right now, we've got a tremendous pressure from not only the UN, but especially from communist China to take over most of our institutions in this country. And that's what we put in this week's announcement. I call this program One Party Rule, Are We There Yet? And it's no accident that I showed a culvert full of rattlesnakes, a den of rattlesnakes, expressing exactly where we're heading. And if we allow one party rule in this country, we're done. We're done as a country. We cannot allow that to happen. And our guest today, Dr. Shiva Iyadure, is a gentleman who came from India. His family came from India. And he is an amazing individual. He's going to be joining us at the top of the hour. Amazing individual who has, he exemplifies the American dream. This gentleman has multiple PhDs. He holds 4 degrees from MIT, including a PhD in biological engineering. He's the guy that actually invented email. This is absolutely amazing that we can get people like this to come on and talk about what's been happening. And Dr. Shiva has been our guest before, but it's been a while. It's been about a year, close to a year since we've had him on. And one of the things that he will be talking about, he was part of the Absolute Proof video that Mike Lindell made about the theft of the 2020 election. And Dr. Shiva has done, with other members of his professional team, has actually done investigations into the mathematical anomalies associated with the election. And in fact, he has pretty conclusive proof that what happened, he's done the mathematics on it, and what happened with these spikes in votes and all the things that happened during the 2020 presidential election, the chances, the likelihood of those happening one time is something like 1 in a billion. And the chance of it happening in all of the so-called swing states, the key states, together is something like 1 in a trillion. Because the fact is mathematically, the chances are exponentially higher that you would be able to get every swing state to somehow miraculously at 2 o'clock in the morning with these massive spikes in votes, switch from a heavy Trump lead to a very narrow margin of victory for Joe Biden and Biden-Harris. So we're going to be going through all the numbers on that. We're going to be looking at the information that Dr. Shiva has. And we're going to be talking about, you know, the 2020 election, because I don't care what anybody says. There are way too many questions about this, and those questions need to be answered. You can say, oh, it's all conspiracy theory. You can say all this crap that the lamestream media has been doing for the last 2.5 months. But the fact is, it is not a conspiracy theory. There are too many eyewitnesses. There's too much information. There's too many computer anomalies. There's too many instances where we've got over 1,000 individuals who have come forward under oath, under threat of perjury. And believe me, they've been threatening them not only with perjury, but there's even been physical threats against many of these people. And the fact that they're allowing that to happen and they're saying, this is crazy, this is all conspiracy theory, when there's that huge amount of evidence available supporting the idea that we are in a situation where we have a very, very unfair, very questionable election process. This is not only about 2020. This is about what are we going to do in the future? What kind of elections? Are we even going to have elections in this country? And that's a big question, because right now, with the process set up the way it is, I doubt seriously if we will ever again see another fair and honest election in the United States. If it happens, it'll only happen because the citizens of the United States and the state governments throughout the United States tell the federal government, we're not going to do it your way, we're going to do it our way, and we're going to go back to paper ballots, we're going to go back to photo IDs. I mean, you've got to have a photo ID right now to do anything, to go into a federal building, to get on an airplane. You know, they practically cavity search you to go on an airplane flight. And yet somehow it's okay to turn in votes without any positive identification. This is insanity. This is absolute insanity. Thumper, I appreciate the fact that you hang in there with me on these programs. Let me know when Dr. Shiva comes on. He should be coming on any second. So
I'm looking for him here, and I'll let you know.
Yeah. Well, he's a very busy man, but we're very honored to have him on the program. We've been so fortunate to have so many good guests on. Incidentally, Thumper, I've got looking at Terry Turchi coming on my program I do next week with Dr. Alan Keyes on IMTV. He's going to come back on for that program, and we're going to talk about much of what we talked about this Sunday.
Nice,
fantastic guest, I have to tell you. Isn't he amazing?
He is. He did an outstanding job. And, you know, we still had people yesterday. They were posting up his book that we were promoting for him the other day. And the video that I uploaded is doing quite well as well. So,
well, I have to tell you that book by the Weather Underground, the Prairie Fire book.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Amazon trying to get a copy of it, And the cheapest copies of the used ones are around $300.
Holy moly.
Yeah. So in other words, they don't want people reading them, obviously. So I had Terry send me a, he had a email copy of it, a video copy of it he sent to me. So we're going to go over that next week on the program there. So, but yeah, it's fascinating. Some of the things going on, I'm looking forward to hearing too from, Harry Bullions. I want to get Harry back on our program because, you know, he was practically in tears right after the election when he was on with us back in early November. He was practically in tears because he said, how could you let this happen to your country? What you are going to see now is what South Africa has been going through for the last 20 years, and that is genocide. That is a total takeover of the country by communists and the genocide against the white farmers there. What we're seeing, the kind of crazy race war nonsense that we're hearing now in this country. First of all, we are not a communist country, and we are never intended to be a communist country. And they are trying to create the kind of chaos and race wars and things in this country that will create the kind of rift, the kind of hatred of one another, the kind of problems that get people to separate themselves, to get people to demand that somebody do something. It's the same thing. We go back to the idea of the Hegelian dialectic, and that's what we put in the program today. Problem, reaction, solution is not something that we need to do anymore. Those are what's known as false flag operations, and we've seen them time after time after time. Now I see Joe Biden talking about massive gun control nationwide, and I see him talking about eliminating so many different kinds of personal firearms. And I'm telling you, people need to wake up. They need to look at what they're going to try to do. There's going to be a false flag operation. There's going to be another firearms tragedy. I almost guarantee it, to try to sell this crap to the American people. And if we are disarmed, and Thumper, I've got a video that I found that I'm going to put on. I'm going to send you a copy of it about what happens to countries when they disarm. Fascinating video mm-hmm. that I found, and we need to get the permission of the folks who made it, but I don't think that'll be any problem. But it shows how every time they've disarmed the population of their country around the world, that it ended up in tragedy. It ended up in a situation where people were shot or taken into concentration camps or made prisoners of a system that was designed to take away everything. So anyway, with that, yes, I think we're going to be facing a lot of things in the next couple of months. And I think that the next 4 years, unless something very serious happens, I think the next 4 years are going to be not good. Not good.
Well, you're right. We're watching what's going on with President well, I don't even like to call a guy president because I you know, to me, he is an imposter. He's a fraud, and his authority is as fraudulent as the votes that they supposedly tallied up for the guy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, one of the things, you know, last night on my late night show, Dan, I was, covering a lot of this. One of the stories was the history of the Khazarian mafia and, you know, their absolute, commitment to, what it is that they're doing and the history, of them and the, where they came from in Europe. And, these people are vile. They're, psychopathic megalomaniacs. And they, you know, when, we talk about by any means necessary, they will continue to, you know, push forward on all of this. And, as we see it in our world, that's been a multi-generational, effort by these folks to infiltrate into our government. And they've used a number of different techniques in order to, bring in this socialism and, one world government and then, Radix, you know, she penned up a wonderful article that talked about how it's, social alchemy, to, manipulate and maneuver people through any number of different, means. And these are sophisticated, social, programs through TV advertising, you know, groups, local groups, regional groups, and things like that, who are brought in and told, "Oh, you're doing something for the greater good," and you know, and these groups are maneuvered, much like, you know, I see reports, studies coming out of our colleges that are pushing these agendas as if they are some kind of you know, qualified, entity to be pushing this out. But when you look at how they came to those conclusions and the activities of, you know, the communists, the Chinese Communist Party and other communist actors, globalist actors, within the academia at our, higher learning institutions, they can wrap a bunch of bullshit in a bunch of words that make it sound so sweet and enticing that, unless you've really got your papers open and your head is on a swivel, it's hard not to get sucked in by this stuff. And that's this, social alchemy, is the name that they've given it. Yeah, you know, and remember the back in the day, you know, alchemists, you know, take lead and turn it into gold, right?
Right, right. Yeah, no, and Thumper, what you're talking about is a Delphi technique, and it's been something that's been in our university system, in our education systems, and now it's in a lot in the public square where they have actually learned how to manipulate groups. What they do is they go in, they sell this crap that you're talking about, these crazy ideas, and then they try to identify all their opponents out in the audience, and one by one they try to marginalize all the people mm-hmm. who oppose them until they get to the point where people believe nonsense, even though they don't really agree with it, but they start to believe it because they think everybody else believes it because they silence all the opposition to it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's exactly what communists do. And that's what they're trying to do right now in our country with all this talk about right-wing extremists and domestic terrorists. Anybody who voted for Trump is a domestic terrorist, and that is complete and absolute garbage.
Mm-hmm. The you know, the, When you talk about garbage, you know, I read the story this morning on my show, how the I think it's the New York Times is slowly retracting the story about this Sicknick police officer that was that died there on the 6th of January. Now, you were there. Mm-hmm. You weren't at the Capitol. You were at the Ellipse, and you didn't go down to the Capitol. But you know, they put out the story that he was beaten with a fire extinguisher and died of blunt force trauma to the head and all this other stuff, and incited a lot of people. Well, nothing was further from the truth, because yeah. I remember hearing about that. And, you know, some of the reports that I got were that, you know, he died of a, I believe it was a heart attack, or it was a medical issue, not anything having to do with what was happening at the Capitol that day. He might have been at home and had the same thing happen to him.
Right.
Yeah. But they and we've got a media out there that even when we catch them in the lie, much like you know, Trump's lawyers caught the House members, the managing members, or whatever they call that. You know, joke of a committee that was up there trying to, you know, make the case against President Trump. They just manufacture it, and they've been doing this for so long that they believe that this stuff is going to stick.
Mm-hmm.
And what it really is. Pretty obnoxious to me.
Well, you know, of all the, you know, now they're claiming there were, depending on who you're listening to, anywhere from 4 to 6 deaths caused by the rioters, by the mob, as they call it, at the Capitol. Well, in fact, the only one who actually died there as a result of a mob was the young lady who was shot by one of the Capitol police through the door. And with the exception of that, the others, so we were standing down at the Ellipse right in front of the Capitol building, and not 30 feet away from us, someone had a heart attack. And, you know, they called for a doctor, and they tried to get everybody to move out of the way and get a doctor in there. And the person died before they could get an ambulance in to pick him up. Well, they called that part of the mob. You know, that's part of the people who died. Well, guess what? That's exactly it would have happened if that had been somewhere else as well. You know, so they're just making these numbers up, Thumper. They're
and to be honest with you, have you you probably have not seen the complete debunking of that so-called woman getting shot?
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen the debunked video on that?
I have seen it. I just saw it the other day, as a matter of fact.
I thought maybe I might have sent it to you, but even that, you know, when we have crisis actors that are being hired to man up so many of these false flag events, mm-hmm. In order to create a visual and some 15-second sound bites and what have you that the media has been using in this process of social alchemy. You know? Mm-hmm. It really is disturbing, and I'm really looking forward to the day when people are going to actually start realizing in earnest what actually has been going on in our society, and that this stuff has been placed in front of them for not only their consumption, but also to manipulate their thoughts and their mm-hmm. views on certain things. and to basically numb them, literally numb them into accepting these these socialistic, globalistic, total control schemes that are being perpetrated against, well, not just the United States, but worldwide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is, Thumper, they have gotten away with this because they have controlled so much of what people see. They've controlled the lamestream media or downstream media, if you want to call it that. They've controlled academia. They've wormed themselves into every aspect of our lives to the point where average people have no clue what's going on in the world. And frankly, you and I have been in this fight for a long time. We've been reading and researching and learning and trying to keep on top of this stuff. And I'm sure you feel like I do. Frankly, I don't think I knew quite exactly how deeply and how nasty and how diabolical and how far this whole process had gone. You know, I felt like it was coming and it was here, but I didn't realize just exactly how pervasive it was throughout our entire culture. And now with the fact that social media has been co-opted into the system, just like the lamestream media has been, is pretty phenomenal, because the you know, they've co-opted something that we thought would always assure us, guarantee us that we would have the right for free and open thought and discussion and free speech. And now they've even co-opted that. I'll tell you what, it's astounding how much they've taken over.
Yes. That is the scary part. Sorry, I was a bit distracted there.
I have
getting texts in this morning. They had to take my dad to the hospital last night.
Oh dear.
And so I'm getting he's got a lower back issue.
Oh.
And so he was in some pain, and so they took him to the hospital last night, and we're just getting updates. So I was reading those text updates as you were talking there. My apologies.
Well, I apologize to our listeners that so far I've not been able to get Dr. Shiva. I did while you were talking, and while we were doing the UN video, I was trying to make sure that Dr. Shiva was available. I sent a text message and I made a phone call to him, and I just tried to get a hold of his assistant, who does all of his appointments, and asked her to make sure we get him on. So I apologize to our listener. Normally, we have pretty well have everything covered ahead of time, and normally I check with our listener with our guests before they come on to make sure everything is all set. And I did that yesterday. Last night, and had assurances that everything was all set. So looks like we're he might have gotten busy, might have gotten sidetracked or something, but in any case, we will keep trying to get him on, because I really want to have his input. What he did in that Absolute Proof video is pretty phenomenal, because I had seen him with two gentlemen who work with him. One of them is a systems engineer that works with him, and another one is a researcher. And they had done an analysis, I believe it was the Wisconsin vote. It might have been Michigan, but I'm thinking it was Wisconsin, and how votes flipped in the middle of the night, and how the actual chart, when you chart how the votes came in, that this statistical anomaly was so odd that it was virtually impossible to do anything like that. So anyway, that was that was what I was going to try to have him kind of go over with us.
Yeah, well, obviously he's a very sought after person. And so,
yeah,
you know, he's it would be nice if we could get him in here for the remainder of the show here. Let's see here. Yeah, if we don't solve or get something done between now and the next election cycle, Dan, how are we going to get people to come out and vote? I mean, people, obviously disconnecting from the system isn't really the correct way to do it, unless we disconnect from one system and create a new system and demand that the new system that we create be the end all be all. To me, that's almost the inevitable answer to all of this, is to, you know, just completely, you know, throw out that old system, create an entirely new system based on solid ability to not track the individual, but track the vote once the individual mm-hmm. makes the vote. And to me, a paper ballot is one of the tried and true methods, maybe a little 1800 is, you know, but
we you know. Did it, Thumper, until, you know, until about 15, 20 years ago. Every one of our elections was handled with a paper ballot, and we had very, very few problems. You know, there, mm-hmm. there's always going to be situations where, well, like Lyndon Johnson, it's obvious. There was a great article in the New American here last month, or last week, I guess it was, about how Lyndon Johnson stole the election in Texas, the senatorial election. Lyndon Johnson stole every election he ever got involved in because he was a crooked SOB. You know, mm-hmm. that's just the bottom line. The guy was a creep. And if people don't believe that, take a look at, you know, how many things he got involved in and how his family enriched themselves. You know, I'm talking the Vietnam War, all kinds of things. So,
well, Lady Bird, how many construction companies did she own that were under contract in Vietnam?
Yeah, Brown and Root Construction actually started. Yeah. They did a project, Mohole. Lyndon Johnson as president, authorized. In fact, he might have been vice president. It might have been before he was president, but he authorized a project to drill down through the ocean, down through the floor of the ocean, called Project Mohole. And the government funded $1 billion to this project to make it work. And as a little thank you from Brown and Root Construction for handing them this contract, an open-ended contract, Lyndon Johnson got 10% of the company.
Well, isn't that just, really sweet?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and then of course, Brown and Root was the primary contractor in Southeast Asia, in Vietnam, but also in Thailand and all over the area. When Lyndon Johnson died in the mid-70s, they estimated his worth at somewhere around $2.5 billion between television stations, radio stations, and construction projects. He went from being a grade school teacher when he first ran for office in the mid-40s. To being a multi-billionaire when he died.
And all it took was to win a couple of elections.
Yeah, exactly. And especially some crooked ones.
Yeah. Do tell. You know, it's funny because, you know, part of the one of the documents I was reading last night about these deep underground bases and everything, a company that I worked for. Now, I've been around Brown and Root. Brown and Root had numerous contracts up on the North Slope of Alaska when I was working up there. And I was working for Morrison Knudsen, which is a multinational major contractor worldwide. And, and you keep seeing these names, Fluor, Brown and Root, Schlumberger, Morrison Knudsen. Morrison Knudsen only pops up every now and then because they're kind of the general contractor, you know, and they hire all these other guys to do the work and stuff. But, I worked most specifically for Morrison Knudsen up on the Trans-Alaska Pipeline area, and they had the Valdez Terminal. They had some major projects up in the North Slope. Brown and Root, they were in charge of a bunch of the drilling rigs up there. Fluor and Schlumberger as well were all up there, and these companies they're all connected to the energy industry in some form or fashion, and when you start connecting the dots, it becomes just a spider web of connections and back scratching and favors and some of these companies, they've been working with the government for so long, they're tied into Halliburton, absolutely, yeah, Halliburton, big outfit in the oil industry, and then when you start talking to labor unions, oh yeah, your pipe fitters, mm-hmm. Electricians Brotherhood, the EBAW or whatever it is, Electrical Brotherhood Workers Association, or I forget what, those guys, to a large extent, and then your other unions are, you know, attached in some form or fashion, and the technology that they use, and so when you start talking about deep underground bases and tunnel boring machines. Like the Big Bertha that was over in Seattle doing the new the bypass of the viaduct, the Alaska Viaduct that they just finished over there in Seattle. It's not hard to see, you know, how all of these people are all connected in there, and once you get connected into the certain group, a lot of that money that gets paid is to keep you quiet money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, keep you loyal to, you know, the secrets and stuff, and when that starts, you know, things clam up really, really fast, and people become very, very diligent about not, you know, they're part of that select group, and that's the kind of stuff that needs to stop, and it needs to be rooted out of our government, and I hope at some point in time we can do that, because it'll destroy any semblance of, you know, what we prefer to have as a representative republic, and these people are just going to keep going down the road of their globalist socialist agenda, because they know best, because they know the real action behind the scenes, you know?
Well, the thing is that almost every one of these groups and these people, Thumper, look at most of humanity as nothing other than intelligent animals, if they even think they're intelligent. Mm-hmm. They look at human beings as pretty much the same category as ants or lice or, you know, a plague on on the globe. And so they think they're so much smarter and so much better than the rest of us that they need to eliminate most of us. And people need to understand they're really, truly serious about this. And, you know, you talked about Halliburton. Kellogg, Brown and Root ended up being the company that Dick Cheney became president of. And just before he became vice president of the United States, just before 9/11, coincidentally, he was the head of that construction company. And guess who became the biggest contractor in Iraq? Same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing. Mm-hmm. The companies that these people own or they control end up getting all these contracts that makes them filthy rich. There's a reason, and I'm gonna say this. There's a reason that Liz Cheney went out so hard against President Trump, that she was one of the ones that joined the impeachment proceedings against President Trump. President Trump, and maybe most of our listeners may know this, but maybe some don't. President Trump was a 9/11 truther because he's a builder. He saw, just like I am a builder, saw that those buildings couldn't possibly, the Twin Towers or Building 7 couldn't possibly have come down the way they did because of a jet plane flying into two of them and a third one that wasn't even touched by anything and had just a couple of small office fires on a couple of different floors. Mm-hmm. That somehow that these buildings just fell to the ground in complete collapse. And well, so, you know, Trump was going to bring all this stuff out eventually.
Mm-hmm.
I'm frankly disappointed he didn't bring them out in the first year he was in office. I think that would have been the best thing he could ever done is expose the New World Order. But the fact is, I think he had to have one term of office under his feet just to know who he could trust and who he couldn't. Because frankly, very few of these people could he actually trust, including mm-hmm. most of the members of Congress, most of the members of the Senate. I know some of these people. They're useful idiots. They're toadies. They won't go anywhere that puts them at any kind of risk as going out on a limb for thinking outside of the box.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we've got them in Montana. We got tons of them here in Montana. We've got a couple of them right now, you know, in the Senate. And all I can say is that I think Trump realized that he didn't have enough people behind him to go completely open with everything that's been going on in the world. But, you know, 9/11 really was an inside job. I don't mm-hmm. know. I'm not going to say who exactly was at the center of it because I have no idea. Absolutely. But we can certainly make our, you can connect the dots.
Well, and who got paid off by the insurance policy?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. At nearly double what the buildings were actually worth.
Mm-hmm. And the buildings were actually in a semi-condemned state. Mm-hmm. They had been requesting permission to have them brought down, but they weren't going to allow them to implode them. Go ahead and answer that and I'll mumble on here. But they weren't going to allow them to implode them. They would have had to take them apart stick by stick. And as a result, that was way, way too expensive. The occupancy in the building was in the buildings was like, I think 30 or 40%. It was dismal. They weren't making any money. And so the next best plan was to figure out a way to accidentally bring them down. And I'm convinced that that's what they chose to do. And now the proper channels were opened up so that this could happen. And so they ran this operation as not only a false flag, but it also served the purpose of eliminating a couple of buildings that Silverstein didn't want to have around anymore. And our government could use the whole affair to go after Iran and Afghanistan and, you know, whatever else we needed to do over there, because certain countries over there just weren't playing nice. They didn't want to take up and jump on board with the central bankers. They wanted to have their own banking system. What a crazy, you know, out of date idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to tell you that, you know, every time you go to these things, you go back and you connect them, and there's nothing that happens in this world by accident anymore. It really doesn't. Everything is connected. It always, you can connect the dots on all this stuff. Thumper, Dr. Shiva just contacted me on the phone. He's going to join us on Zoom in just a few minutes. If we can, I'd like to ask the girls if we could go over into the next hour, because he's got quite a bit of information he wants to show our viewers and our listeners, and he's going to join us on Zoom. So
okay. Let me see if I can that one of them might be listening. If not, I'll do a message to him. So I'm gonna turn it over to you here in a second.
Yeah.
Let me make those contacts and see what they say.
Okay. Well, I think Dr. Shiva said that it'd take him just a few minutes to get online, but I don't know. I think he must have had something else going on. He didn't realize that he was supposed to be on air. But anyway, yeah, what you're talking about, Thumper, what we realize now today is that so many of these things are geared to forcing the entire world to accept a one world government. And that one world government is going to be incredibly powerful and incredibly detrimental to human life on Earth. These people, most of them are anti-humanists, and they really honestly want to control the entire world because they believe that they're the only ones smart enough to do it in a way that's going to preserve the Earth for them. And this is insane ideas from insane people, but, you know, we've had crazy people in power for a long time. So I have to tell you, the chances of us winning this battle are very, very good if we look at the numbers, if we just get off our couch and start to be part of the problem. Or quit being part of the problem and start being part of the solution, because the fact is that the numbers are huge. I mean, the people on this earth that could contribute positively are almost unlimited. And so we need to make sure that we get as many people as we can to wake up, get off the couch, be part of the solution. Get out and do everything you can to make your voices heard. And I'm not talking about violence. I'm talking about contacting all of the people around you, being outspoken, talking to legislators. You know, if enough people do anything, they have a positive impact. If you only have a handful of people doing all the heavy lifting, nothing ever gets done. But if you've got, as the old saying goes, many hands make light work. It's the same in our political culture as well. So what we need to do is make sure that we have many hands involved in this process of saving our republic. And Thumper, you're absolutely right. Where we're at right now, if we don't get on the ball, if we don't, if Americans don't fight for their freedom by standing up and being involved in the whole political process and doing everything necessary to get our country back, if we don't do that, then we're not going to have a country. And guess what, folks? If you care anything about your children or your grandchildren, you better realize that they aren't going to have a future unless we all do together. We all have to be part of that process. So anyway, I believe Dr. Shiva should be on any second. He said that he was heading back toward his office and that he was going to get on Zoom so that he could join us. What we will be talking about is the obviously the election fraud situation and how the computer anomalies are such a big part of what happened in the swing states. And I think, quite honestly, I think the votes throughout the whole country, not just the swing states, but throughout the country, were considerably different than what we actually ended up with on the morning of the 5th. I think that in truth that Donald Trump probably got a lot more votes than even what was shown to be flipped at the last minute. I think that Donald Trump had far and away a big majority in this country of the vote. And some of the things that came from different news sources around the world indicated that Donald Trump had actually won even the state of California before the votes got flipped, that he had won 410 electoral votes, where Joe Biden had won 125. And that's pretty amazing. So if it actually was flipped that far, we are in such a horrible situation right now. In fact, we are seeing our country now completely dismantled because of the things that are going on right now in Washington, D.C., the executive orders, the disarming of Americans, the ending of the border wall and the opening of the borders. There are so many things going on that are counter to what the American people have ever expressed. And like even Obamacare, the majority of Americans were not in favor of Obamacare. Yet, even with the majority in both houses at the beginning of Donald Trump's first 2 years in office, he couldn't get the Republicans to overturn the Obamacare mandates. He just couldn't get them to do it. And yet they all ran and won their seats by saying that they would overturn Obamacare if they were reelected. And that shows you how deep the deceit is. That shows you how bad the deceit is. And all I can say is that we've sure got a lot of people in this country in political positions that do not represent the will of the people. They do not represent their constituents. They really represent their own interests, and that's all there is to it. So anyway, that's kind of where we're at on that. But I think, the fact that I think we saw the charts. I can't remember the news agency that Thumper that did the charts on that. Anyway, they did a map that supposedly was being shown in Germany to the people in Germany as the election was proceeding. And that map showed a huge increase for President Trump. I'm going to pick
sounds,
that
sounds
up.
Sounds like you got another phone call there, Dan, and you know, I'll jump in here. Sorry, I wasn't able to just kind of pick up where Dan was because I was doing some messaging behind the scenes there, and we're trying to work out. Oh, there is Dr. Shiva now. Dan, we have Dr. Shiva. He's joined the show. Can you hear me okay there, Dr. Shiva? You're muted right now.
Okay.
Dan just got a call. I think he thought it was maybe you calling.
No, it was me because I was trying to get the password and I saw it. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Now, is this live or you guys record it?
We are live.
Okay.
Yes. So, Dan's, I think he, okay. He'll be right in here. He's getting his headset on.
Dr. Shiva, welcome to the program. I just tried to pick up the phone. I think you might have tried to call me, or maybe Manju had tried to call me on the other line. But thank you for joining us. I was in a panic trying to fill in for you.
Okay, I'm sure you did a good job.
Well, I have to tell you, the information that you had on the absolute proof video, and I saw another video about a month and a half ago that you did with two of your friends who are involved in data research and systems engineering, where you showed the anomalies that had happened. And it seems to me like it was in the state of Wisconsin, but it may have been in Michigan.
Michigan.
I'm not sure. Okay. All righty. Anyway, I want, we're going to give you as much time as you want to spend with us, but I want you to talk about, first of all, what occurred in your election when you ran for Senate in Massachusetts, because you got a really, really good insight into how the system gets manipulated in Massachusetts, and then you got involved when the presidential election went the way it did. Yours was a primary election that you saw skewed so bad, correctly?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. One thing, Dan, are you recording this also, right?
Yes. It's just being recorded.
You are. In this interview, if you can give it to me, I'll also stream it, you know, afterwards.
Sure, we will.
Okay. Yeah, because I think what I want to, you know, I've been... let me start this way to everyone listening. This is what people need to understand. In the United States, we do not have elections. We have selections. So I'm going to tell the punchline, and as we would do in science, what the thesis statement is, and I'm going to back into and prove that. We have selections. We do not have elections. We, for many, many years, the mainstream media has been always pointing at other countries as quote unquote third world countries, be it, and, you know, dictatorships, you know, Venezuela and China and Russia and, you know, failed democracies, Africa, India, wherever you want to put it. And what I want to assert is what I've unfortunately discovered is that this country has becoming, in Massachusetts, I'll tell you right now, is a third world state. And this country is becoming that, or if not that already. And maybe it's perhaps for us to assume that's where we are. So we have an opportunity to actually dig ourselves out. But that's a thesis statement. And for me to say that, it's quite unfortunate for me to say that because my parents left India. You know, we grew up as what we're called low caste, you know, untouchables, which means the lowest of the low, to come to this country primarily for a couple of reasons. One was because of the fairness and the equality this country offered. But the other person was the concept of one person, one vote, right? These were two things that compelled my parents from their extraordinary circumstances to come here. And that's what motivated me to work hard to do well in school, I was a research fellow at the age of 14, where I created the first email system in Newark, New Jersey. Before I came to MIT, ended up getting 4 degrees, started a bunch of companies, and still continue to work hard, and decided that it was important that other kinds of voices be in the American landscape of politics? You know, maybe an engineer, maybe a scientist. And that's why I decided to run. In 2018, we ran. And our biggest enemy, even though I ran initially as a Republican, was not the Democrats, but the Republicans, the Republican GOP. So the other thesis statement is everyone should dump this stuff in the garbage that Republicans versus Democrats, left versus right. This is a fake dialectic. And as long as people fall into this, nothing will happen and you're caught in the enemy's clutches because they want you to practice WWF wrestling and they want you to watch the Kabuki Theater, which is what took place over the last 4 years. So in 2018, when I ran against Elizabeth Warren, by the way, no one from the quote unquote Trump campaign supported us when they should have. We're the ones who went hard against Warren. We're the ones who forced her to take the DNA test. We ran as Republicans. The Massachusetts GOP in 2018 ran a guy who had photoshopped a picture with Trump. There's three hands in the picture. And that was done to convince Trumpers that this guy was a Trump candidate. You follow? So we were forced to run as independents. We got 100,000 votes. We're the ones who exposed Warren as having low integrity, you know, or no integrity. And we got 100,000 votes. That was in 2018, five times more than any independent candidate ever in Massachusetts history. In 2020, we decided to run as Republicans in the primary. And we ended up having 3,000 volunteers, which is quite extraordinary. Mm-hmm. You know, over 10,000 lawn signs, 20,000 bumper stickers. We raised a couple of million, all bottoms up. People from all over the country sent us $5, $10, because we were hitting hard at the fundamental issue of the freedom was being denied. And when you deny freedom, you can't get to truth. And without truth, you can't understand real problems to get to health. And without health, you don't have the infrastructure for yourself personally or, you know, broadly to fight for freedom, truth, freedom, and health. That slogan, which was more than just a slogan, was founded on very fundamental scientific principles, caught hold. And we were everywhere, Dan. The word in Massachusetts when it was Dr. Shiva, we had at least 90-95% visibility, was the word landslide, was everywhere. The Massachusetts GOP, again, the Republicans, were our real enemies. They found some fool to run who was nowhere to be found. No campaign organization, no lawn signs, no bumper stickers, nothing. We went to every city. And the word, again, I keep mentioning was landslide. September 1st, 2020 was the Republican primary. And I was campaigning all the way until, you know, 7 p.m. Well, we had our party set and we see the results come in the Massachusetts counties, in Franklin County, which is predominantly all hand counted ballots. We win there by 10 points. And in every other county, it was 60-40. Here's a guy who grew up in Greenwich, Connecticut, who gets 60-40 in all black, you know, Brockton. Okay. Mm-hmm. In all Hispanic Lawrence. This guy was like a man for all seasons. Impossible. Mm-hmm. The night before the election, the Secretary of State, whose name is the Prince of Darkness, completely corrupt guy, Bill Galvin, he said only 150,000 people are going to vote in the Republican primary, when in every primary, at least 260,000 people have voted. So he was, because he knew our election was bringing out people. 60% of our campaign were people who never voted, Dan. We were really bringing out the American masses who had really were looking for a real candidate, which was us, which was me. Mm-hmm. So what we saw on election night was, it's like ridiculous. 60-40 in every county that was hand counted votes. And in the only county that was predominantly, machine counted. And in the only county that was hand counted, I win by 10 points. And it was quite extraordinary. So my concession speech on September 1st, 2020 was, election fraud took place in third world Massachusetts. And I said, I'm glad we have the Second Amendment. Okay. So that was my concession speech. By September 9th, I was starting to receive lots of people telling me, hey, do you know, I mean, a lot of my close associates were saying the only way you're going to lose, Shiva, is if there's election fraud. I go, that doesn't take place in America. You know, that was probably my naive day. But by September 9th, I had discovered that starting in 2002, the voting machines in the United States had a feature starting with the grandfather voting machines, the Diebold systems, called the weighted race feature, right, which means they can multiply weights using an algorithm. Okay. And for that matter, our votes are actually stored as decimals, which is even more profoundly amazing. That means it's not one person, one vote. It could be 1.1 or 0.6 or 0.7 votes. And these weighted race algorithms, so if you got 1,000 votes, this is how unbelievable it is. And it's in page 2-126 of the Diebold manual, clearly says it in black and white, that they have an algorithm, which you get 1,000 votes, I get 1,000 votes, your votes could be multiplied by two. So you end up getting 2,000 votes, Dan, and I end up getting, let's say, my votes get multiplied by 0.6, so I end up getting 600 votes. It's in the manual. Mm-hmm. All right. This is not conspiracy. It's in the manual, a feature that can allow votes to be fractionalized or multiplied, which means a feature that denies one person one vote, which was a very important clarification of the 14th Amendment that took place in 1964 by Justice Earl Warren, clarifying one person one vote. Okay. So we don't have that once you have electronic voting machines. So what we found was starting September 9th, I'd figured this out. And on September 9th, I went to the Secretary of State. And I issued a FOIA, public records request. And I wanted something very important called a ballot images. Now, why are they important? Well, in all the electronic voting machine counties or precincts, they literally take a paper ballot and it gets scanned. When it gets scanned, Dan, it gets converted to an image. Mm-hmm. All right. So the paper ballot is used to generate an image. That image is what is then counted by the voting machine. In the case of a hand-marked paper ballot where a human being counts it, two people actually look at it and they're tabulating, which means a paper ballot is reviewed by a human. But in the case of electronic voting machines, a paper ballot is converted to a photographic image or some image in the computer. The paper ballot is set aside. What is counted is that ballot image. Okay? Now, according to 52 USC 20701, the rule, it was a previous code that was converted to that in 1974. Any records generated is a keyword, in connection with the federal election must be preserved for 22 months. Right. Well, the ballot image didn't exist. It was generated. It is the ballot, which is used for counting. As far as anyone with common sense is, what is counted is the ballot. The ballot image is what the computer scans to figure out the ellipses, right? So on September 9th, I issued a FOIA. In fact, I went physically with two of my volunteers with a camera to the Secretary of State, and I said, I want the ballot images. And by the way, the ballot images are supposed to be preserved. You could put all the ballot images on Massachusetts in a small hard drive about this big for $500.
Right.
It's not
right.
that expensive. So the guy behind the counter says, we don't have those ballot images. We turned that feature off.
Okay? Oh, no. Wow.
And so I didn't say anything. I gave them my FOIA. They have 10 days to respond. On September 25th, the Secretary, by the way, between September 1st and September 24th, on Twitter, I've never been thrown off Twitter. I've talked about all controversial things, forced vaccinations, everything you can imagine, right? Hitting Warren viciously. September 1st to September 24th, I was talking about, I said election fraud took place in Massachusetts. I said, ballot images have been deleted. Ballot images. This is a violation of federal law. Mm-hmm. Twitter didn't touch me. But on September 24th, what happened was the Secretary of State writes to me, to be specific, the election director, and says, we don't have the ballot images. We are prohibited from saving them according to Massachusetts law. So I write back, Ms. Tassinari, that's the name of the election director. Can you please show me the Massachusetts statute which allows you not to do this? She writes back another email saying we have the paper ballots, but we don't have the ballot images. I write back and I say you violated federal law. I said this election is null and void because the ballot images are what are used for tabulation. And tabulation is fraud. If you can't tabulate, what did you tabulate on? You didn't tabulate the paper. You had to use the images. Those four emails, Dan, I put up on my Twitter account, putting them all, a threaded tweet of those four images, the email conversation, which is public information. Bam, I was banned. Remember, quote unquote, we allegedly lost the primary. So I moved my campaign in the general elections to a write-in. We have such profound support bottoms up. And we distributed starting on September 1. We put out 1 million of these cards. I don't know if you can see these.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. 1 million. Okay. The Trump campaign was always calling it voter fraud. We called it election fraud. So our volunteers were out there in the rain and the snow putting these out. Okay. So what happens is that I get thrown off Twitter in the middle of my federal election campaign. And a organization called Lead Stories, who does a hit job on me, they're supposedly a fact-checking organization. They do a saying, oh, Shiva, Dr. Shiva's lying. You know, he's spreading election and missing. There were no ballots deleted. I never said ballots. I said ballot images, which are the ballots on electronic voting machines. But in that article, in the hit job article they did something very valuable for me. They said, we talked to the Secretary of State, and the Secretary of State said they contacted Twitter.
Oh, really?
Yes. So now listen to what I'm saying. We keep hearing big tech, big tech, big tech. That's just a ruse. The real issue is the government. The government works with big tech. This is why they haven't gone after Section 230. All these politicians need Facebook. They need Google, okay, to shut out, you know, real rabble rousers like myself, okay? So the government of Massachusetts contacted Twitter to throw me off because I was spreading election misinformation. What was the misinformation? I was sharing the fact that the government of Massachusetts had deleted ballot images, which is a violation of federal law. Mm-hmm. So I looked at that. I couldn't get a lawyer to, I said, okay, I can't go after Twitter. Section 230 will take forever. Election integrity, I don't know enough about, but I do know the First Amendment. So I said, this was one of the most profound violations of the First Amendment, because this is saying that government speech can supersede political speech. I'm a political candidate. This is the foundations of the First Amendment. So I file a lawsuit. I had to do the brief all myself, Dan. And the judge, first victory we got, the judge gave us a hearing. There were two parts of the lawsuit. One is a lawsuit, me demanding about $1.2 billion, very large sum of money. But the other part of the lawsuit was what I called, I need an immediate restraining order, Your Honor, because my election is taking place and the Secretary of State could continue calling Twitter to throw me off. Right? That's called an emergency restraining order. Mm-hmm. Judges don't like to give those hearings, and he gave me the hearing. Number one, victory. Number two, it ended up being a four-hour hearing with me against three lawyers, okay, in federal court, which I've never been in. So in federal court, I had to become my own lawyer, and I represented the fact that there's an issue called, there's a precedent called cat's paw liability. Cat's paw liability is very famous. It comes from the Aesop's fable story where you have a monkey which is trying to steal a chestnut off a fire. He doesn't want to get his fingers burned, so he convinces a monkey to do it. The cat gets his fingers burned and the monkey runs off with the chestnut, okay? So the monkey induced the cat to do the stealing. So this has been in case law where employee one induces an employer to fire employee two. Employee two files a lawsuit, not against the employer, but against the monkey in this case, which is employee one, and they win. It's called cat's paw liability, okay? So I said, look, it wasn't Twitter who threw me off. Twitter was the cat. The monkey was the Secretary of State. They induced Twitter, and that's a violation of the First Amendment. Well, the judge listens to my argument, and he gives me a victory. He orders the restraining order terms, which is that he orders the Secretary of State to stop contacting Twitter. But more importantly, what came out in that four-hour testimony was actual black and white transcript where the Secretary of State election director is admitting she called Twitter. She admits that they have a trusted Twitter partnership.
Wow.
And when they complain, Twitter jumps. They also admitted in federal court testimony and sworn testimony, they contacted a woman called Amy Cohen, this woman, Michelle Tassinari, who's a state election director. Now, who is Amy Cohen? She's the executive director of the Uber organization of all state election directors called National Association of State Election Directors, NASED. Well, why is NASED important? Well, all the state election directors, that's their community. These are the people who are the ones who certify electronic voting machines. Okay?
Got it.
The ones who are certifying voting machines to delete ballot images, to put the weighted race feature in. And who funds the NASED? The Rockefeller Brothers, the Murdochs, the Pew Charitable Foundation, and so on. So a nonprofit who you and I didn't elect is owning, first of all, centralizing this process, right? You could argue. And NASED was contacted by Michelle Tassinari, the state election director, who independently called Twitter. They did a hot call to her And they even have a much more closer relation with Twitter. And they call Twitter to also have me knocked off. So you have the government contacting Twitter to throw off a federal election candidate off Twitter because he was exposing their violation of federal law. The judge in his analysis said, remember, judges only will give you the terms of the restraining order if they think you're going to win the whole case. And the judge said, you know, more than likely, Dr. Iadure will win his full case to show that state action was involved. This is a precedential lawsuit. No media covered it, Dan. Tucker Carlson on the right, no one, because they're all part of it. Wow. We have the not so obvious establishment in this country on the left and the right. So that lawsuit has not been dismissed, unlike every lawsuit that these so-called lawyers filed for Trump. The second lawsuit I filed was we found out, because I'm a mathematician, because I do pattern analysis my whole life, I use my own skills to show that they had multiplied my votes by 0.666 and my opponents by 1.2. How did we find that? Well, we found the source of the real crime scene in one county, in Suffolk County, where we see this up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down pattern, which is supposed to be a random pattern, where you see nine strings of high-low, where the number of odd number of votes to even